the airport manager. He's the guy. Mr. X, community organizer, researcher, friend of the program, who has forgotten more about gangrene, technocracy, and all the other bullshit that we're fighting right now than I'll ever know, probably. Yeah, he rejoins the program. Mr. X, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Bill. I'm exhausted and fatigued like everybody else in our region right now. And looking at every aspect of it, it's an amazing thing that has hit us. And I'm hoping to encourage people to move forward with a positive thing and let's create a base of understanding and more involvement at every level so that we can react in a more positive way all the way around.
So do you think that in this 20-minute talk we're going to have here after news, are we going to be focusing on firefighting or are we keying off maybe on the conversation with Brad Bennington yesterday? Because I'm really concerned that the state system is wanting to shut everything down and would just as soon Phoenix Talent lose half its population because of state land use. What are you thinking of that?
You know, Bill, what you just described is a little bit of all of it that we have to be aware of. You know, my thing has always been that we have to be aware of key policies within the state that they move towards an agenda-based outcome. Now, this is where it went wrong, in my opinion. I look at it very, very strongly in that section. We went wrong by allowing this. They hid it from us. There was no other possibility but to go wrong because they hid it from us, what they were doing. But this was an agenda-based thing. It was an outcome-based thing. And every aspect of everything that I read supports that. And when you start reading all of these documents, it's basically, we're moving to sustainable development. Well, that is, you know, contrary to the laws of the United States.
We have essentially brought in a United Nations program to the state of Oregon in this official state policy.
Right. And every aspect of this, as you follow it down a trail, well, okay, the fire developed. And all you have to do is suspect certain aspects of it. That's all I'm saying. It is within a reasonable thinking person, we have to look towards our future. I understand the concept of a sustainable concept of, well, let's make a move. But the other thing is the affordability of life for everybody.
I'll tell you what, hold that thought. Let's touch in with the rest of the news, and we'll pick up right there. The affordability of life with you, Mr. X. Thanks so much. By the way, I have a link dump. He has sent me so many documents that we can use to educate ourselves. Yeah, you'll have to read. We can't spoon-fed everything, but you need to know what we're going to talk about here coming up on The Bill Myers Show.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language like French, Spanish, or Russian, but thought it would be too difficult and time-consuming? Then go to Babbel.com and try it for free. Babbel works because it's built around real life. It teaches you everyday practical conversations that you will actually use. In 15 minutes a day, you'll be on your way to speaking a new language in just a few weeks. Babbel uses a modern conversation-based technique that makes language engaging, fun, and memorable. It starts by teaching you words and phrases. Then, sentences gradually get more complex. Soon, you're practicing short conversations about real-life topics. Babbel is created by language experts who use the spaced repetition method to help you learn quickly and remember what you learned. With Babbel, you can speak a new language. Babbel. Language for life. Now try Babbel for free. Just go to Babbel.com and start learning a new language today. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
I'm Blakely McHugh with your NBC 5 News Update. The Slater Fire burning in Josephine and Siskiyou counties is over 147,000 acres. Firefighters say the main goal right now is to continue protecting structures and try to slow the spread. It's about 10% contained this morning. There is some good news regarding the South Open Chain fire near Eagle Point. Firefighters say forward progress of that fire has been stopped. That essentially means it hasn't grown, remaining just over 32,800 acres. Crews do say the eastern part of the fire is still a concern because spot fires are still active. With the smoke clearing, though, they were able to get help from aircrafts. The Oregon Department of Forestry says the fire is 25% contained. The city of Phoenix says they will rebuild, but it may take some time. During yesterday's virtual town hall meeting, Phoenix Mayor Chris Luz says with the approved disaster relief fund, he's trying to get the Phoenix Civic Center to open up as a resource building for both the citizens of Phoenix and talent. The Medford School District is launching a wellness hotline to help everyone in the community. The district says its counselors are available to speak with anyone struggling with any possible losses. The program launched yesterday, and the district says they've already received calls from people who need help. That number is 541-842-3643. It's open Monday through Friday from 8 to 4. There's also a Spanish line available from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. And again, that number is 541-842-3643. That's a look at your morning headlines for NBC5 News. I'm Blakely McHugh.
If you need collision repair, nobody does it better than Lithia Body and Paint. Maybe you ended up taking some fire damage, too. Maybe your paint was just scorched. I did see some vehicles going through Phoenix and Talent that are probably still salvageable, maybe savable. But, yeah, they're going to need a little bit of repaint work. So if you are, you're one of those people, or you just need some repair, stop by and see Steve and the gang. Get a fast, free estimate or visit their website for a virtual estimate, too. You have pickup and delivery. They can arrange towing and transportation. They've been doing this since 1946. They know their stuff. Southern Oregonians have trusted Lithia Body and Paint to get their vehicles back on the road like that never happened, okay? It's service, it's speed, it's accuracy. Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
Hi, this is Jesse Keller, the new general manager at American Lumber. I'm excited to apply my building products experience at American Lumber and invite you to stop by our yard on Avenue G in White City and say hello. Visit AmericanLumberLLC.com.
Boy, oh boy, Fred, this sure has been perfect.
What's perfect, Bon?
The summer. We'd had barely any smoke.
Ah, Bon, don't jinx it. At any moment, that could change.
Oops. Well, at least I did something right.
Okay, Bone Rocks, what's that?
I finally called Caveman Heating and Air, along with Tempstar. Turns out my unit wouldn't have survived September. I sure was lucky, Fred, thanks to Caveman Heating and Air.
Call Caveman Heating and Air and join the Cave Club today to save 15%. On all scheduled maintenance. Caveman Heating and Air, along with Tempstar Heating and Cooling Products, meet and exceed both Department of Energy and EPA standards.
I'm the dude, and I say it's the climate, and we control it.
It's a good thing you called Caveman Heating and Air.
Ahem. You told Fred you called?
Oops. Sorry, Betty.
Caveman Heating and Air, along with Tempstar, quality you can feel. Caveman Heating and Air, CCB 160528.
It's playtime all the time at Wind River Casino Resort in Redding.
You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show on 99.3 KCMD and FM 106.7 KMED.
7:38, I'm back with community activist and researcher, friend of the program, Mr. X, Ed. And Ed, we have you back here and glad to have it. And sustainable development, as I was even talking with Brad Bennington yesterday from Southern Oregon Builders Association. Sustainable development, that United Nations program, is official state policy. We're also the only state in the entire country that stupidly has enacted centralized land use planning. Now that we're missing, 23, 24, 25, 26, how many thousands of housing units here with people hurting and homeless right now? We have to have a serious talk about getting rid of this sustainable development policy right away, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely, Bill. I mean, this is the fear, and you know I talked with you about this as the fires were going on. It's not right now we have to worry about. It's what comes next. What comes to us in the next few weeks? When the realities of this start hitting home? And, you know, I look at it and, you know, it's a hard trail, but I'm going to start with something. Was the removal of this placed on administrative leave of the state fire marshal, okay? And you look at, well, why would they do this? And, I mean, there's a document that I sent you. It's from the Oregon Governor's Fire Service Policy Council. Mm-hmm. And this is as of February 2020. But it says, Dear Governor Brown, after reviewing the performance of State Fire Marshal Chief Jim Walker and his staff, the members of the Governor's Fire Service Policy Council continue to be well pleased with the great work done by Chief Walker and his team. Oregon is fortunate to have such a high-achieving team with many states looking to us for best practices. So I'll stop there. I'm looking at this thing, well, okay, where did it go wrong? What, you know, what happened? And then I go to the law, okay, and you 476-020. The Office of State Fire Marshal is established in the Department of State Police. State Fire Marshal shall be appointed by and be administratively responsible to the Superintendent of State Police and shall serve at the pleasure of the Superintendent.
Okay.
State Fire Marshal shall retain all current authority of the office and shall be responsible for the implementation of its missions and programs. So now you look at that, what's the missions and programs part of that? Now you start thinking, well, okay, that's where you got to focus. You got to look at different things. He might have not agreed. He might have voiced something during this emergency. So they placed him on administrative leave. I don't know.
Well, there was a story about him having helped employees search. There was an employee who was concerned about family, and then he ended up getting some local fire official within a fire burn area to go search, and then things seemed to go to hell after that. It struck me as very odd, you know, what happened to him, as if they wanted to put him down somehow and kick him out. And then finally, you know, he ended up tendering his resignation, essentially saying that we're not really backed here. We're not being supported. You know, as a fire marshal, you know, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore.
The reality in the law, when you go to it, 476-030, powers and duties of marshal and deputies, generally rules, exemption of certain governmental subdivisions, inspection of adult foster homes. But there, item number four, it says the state fire marshal may investigate or cause an investigation to be made to determine the probable cause, origin, and circumstances of any fire, and shall classify such findings as the state fire marshal may find appropriate to promote fire protection and prevention.
Hmm.
So if he made a decision to go in there, whether it be to help an employee as part of it, if his intention was to see, you know, what's going on out here, how can I ascertain and create an avenue forward to see what we're fighting to make the appropriate decisions, he didn't do anything wrong. There was no rationale, no reason to put him on an administrative leave. This man had 40 years of experience, and every document I can find shows just high praise for all of his functions, okay?
And so he just went all to hell one night, right? And that destroyed it all?
Right.
I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Not buying it at all.
I'm not either, Bill. And but see, I look at it a little bit differently. Okay, so I take this in, and I make my decision based upon the amount of information that I have, the realities of the information, and I look forward to saying, well, what is the reality here? And the realities are, it's the responses engineered by this consensus-based processes that we have all along. And, you know, there's a thing here, 476-033, the discretionary powers of the state fire marshal. The state fire marshal may, number one, contract or otherwise cooperate with any person or public agency for the procurement of necessary services or property. So you look at that gives him such broad latitude on his performance on anything that he wants to do.
So it would seem that there is really no way to go after him. I mean, he had all sorts of discretion to do that job, right?
Why would you do this in the middle of the nightmare that we were faced with? And I, you know, it just brings me pause, but it also points me into understanding that we as citizens who are the ultimate affected parties by this, that we have to maintain an active role in all of it. We have to move to where we're part of this and not listen to the trending that has been instituted in this state of this consensus-based processes where these stakeholder groups are making these decisions for us.
So how can we connect this? Can we connect any of this with the official state policy of sustainable development, that essentially we're going down the gangrene hole that nobody in Oregon other than the gangrenes has asked for?
Well, I hope to do that through the course of this, Bill, because to what you just asked, it's an inescapable conclusion when you look at it. Okay, you look at this, and like I said, first I go to the law and I look at it. There's another section, 476515. Other officers authorized to act when the governor is unavailable. If the governor is unavailable, make timely exercise of the authority under ORS 476510 to 476610. The superintendent of state police may exercise such authority. And if that individual is unavailable, the state fire marshal may exercise such authority. Any orders, rules, or regulations issued by the superintendent of state police or the state fire marshal pursuant to this section have the same force and effect as if issued by the governor. Okay?
Okay.
So now we have a guy who had 40 years of experience. Do you think that in 40 years of experience, he would have abused the authority that was in his hands?
I would think that if he was abusing authority, he would have abused it far before for the 40th year. That's all.
That's exactly right. So the initial concept is, well, what are the mitigating factors that led to all of this? Well, the mitigating factors are possible disagreements. I don't know for sure. You can't document what it is, but I can tell you what I find. And that's what when I go to this, I find amazing things, okay? There's a document that I sent you. It's the current Oregon Sustainable Development Initiatives, Appendix D.
Okay, let me see if I can find that right now. Well, you just go ahead and move forward. I'll pull it forward because you've given me about, 20 links.
On the initial one with the bulk of the links, I think it's the first one at the top.
Okay, well, I put them all in one group. So go ahead, just do it.
Just look for Portland, www.portlandoregon.gov, BDS article 184672. But this is a document, and basically it's the current Oregon Sustainable Development Initiatives. It's broken into three categories, okay? D1, the city of Portland. D2, regional initiative metro, so the Portland metro. And D3 is the state of Oregon, okay?
All right.
So you look at this whole thing. This is the initiative connected to the official policy of the state of Oregon, okay? This is called Resolution 36548. Direct the Office of Sustainable Development to revise the city's current climate protection plan in coordination with the Bureaus of Planning, Development Services, Environmental Services, Water, Housing, and Community Development. Whereas the scientific consensus is increasingly clear that the human activities are largely responsible for significant global climate change. And whereas most of the impacts of global climate change likely will result from sea level rise.
By the way, it starts with lies right now. It takes scientific opinion of people and turns it into fact in this statement.
That's exactly right. And that's my point. You just made the point for me. But this is official state policy. Now you look at that and the last one I read, the whereas, it goes on several more whereas mm-hmm. and that, but you come up with an ultimate direction, okay? And then they start to talk about this. They go to the Bureau of Development Services, data collection. BDS is Bureau of Development Services, is researching current permitting trends and gathering data on actual green development within the city.
Development. All right. Now, see, this is now you're touching on something that I'm concerned is going to be forced upon Southern Oregon, and meaning that there's no way to afford to rebuild. And I think that ultimately, this is my opinion, of course, it's speculative opinion, that this is part of their plan.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to get to, Bill, is that that's where we need citizen involvement. You go to the next one is Bureau of Planning, Portland Plan. The Bureau of Planning will be leading the development of the Portland Plan, a comprehensive plan for Portland, which will guide the growth and development over the city of the city over the next 30 years. And the reality to it is that all of it comes down, at the bottom it goes to sustainability principle. Sustainability will be incorporated as major issue theme for the Portland Plan, and the Bureau will be working with Office of Sustainable Development to update the city's sustainability principles. Now, I'm going to go from there, for the sake of all the time that has to be spent here, I got to go to the last part of that document for the state. And the last part of the document for the state is basically the legislative concept. House Oregon House Bill D3, State of Oregon, Oregon House Bill 3543, relating to climate change, state of emergency. Now, this was in 2007, I believe, is when they did this. Yeah, the 2007 regular session. Legislative findings. Okay, this is an act, House Bill 3543, sponsored by Dingfelder, Avakian, Cannon, McPherson, Merkley, Reed.
Oh, that was Merkley. Merkley before he became U.S. Senator. Okay, great.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So now you know the group that put this forward, okay? And we know the results of anything that group touches. The Legislative Assembly finds that in December 2004, the Governor's Advisory Group on Global Warming issued its report calling for immediate and significant action to address global warming, to reduce Oregon's exposure to the risk of global warming, and to begin to prepare for the effects of global warming. The advisory group also identified 46 specific recommendations for measurable reductions in the state greenhouse gas emissions. In a partnership, number two, in a partnership with the governor's advisory group, 50 scientists signed the scientific consensus statement on the likely impact of climate change.
I love that term, consensus. Love that term, consensus.
Right. Well, all it is what this does is goes through a complete legislative act that does this. So you look at it, and I go to certain sections, A on section 9, below 11, it says, in concert with complementary policies and actions by other states and the federal government, substantially reduce the global levels of greenhouse gas emissions and the impacts of those emissions. And on C, it goes down and it says, inform and shape national policies and actions in ways that are advantageous to Oregon residents and businesses.
Okay, so why is it our state legislature's business to influence national policy on climate change?
That's where what we've talked about for a long time. That's the National Policy Consensus Center. This is showing you the pathway of the imposition of sustainable development. And it was an intentional thing created through the dispute resolution, alternative dispute resolution program. But this is proof of all of these things because they're attempting to influence national policy.
Now, I consider this evidence of a crime, Ed, you know, if you ask me. I consider this an evidence of a constitutional crime, if you ask me. But
when they didn't inform the people that this was their true direction, I believe you're correct, Bill. Now, when you look at that, I go nuts.
Now, we can't go nuts because, okay, we have to. Here's the deal. I only have a few minutes left in this segment here right now, Ed. And and so we're going to have to probably break this up into bite-sized pieces.
Right.
As far as our local action, earlier this morning, I was saying that essentially how sustainable development is being enforced upon the people here in Southern Oregon through the poor beleaguered residents of Phoenix and Talent, as we look at years, if ever, for a rebuild on the homes and the inability to make affordable homes and all the rest of it. The root of it, certainly, you know, what you had talked about, that legislation from 2007 is certainly enabling, but is not the root of it Senate Bill 100 from the early 1970s? And
that is totally correct, Bill. I mean, but you see how far back this plan begins to formulate.
We're the only state that has centralized land use planning. And
exactly right.
And I'm concerned that people will remain without homes, without shelters, without a way to work, without a way to feed themselves here in Southern Oregon forever unless we either repeal or suspend Senate Bill 100 in the foreseeable future, because of our emergencies that we actually have here in Southern Oregon, real emergencies, unlike their Bullstein climate emergencies that they're always working on in Salem.
Well, the reality is right now in what I see and what I can document, you know, this is the real emergency. The COVID crisis, as people want to talk about it, the COVID-19 crisis. All of this is just an example of enforcing and bringing about the climate policies that you wanted to do and ending of productive capacity, okay? Now, reality is, statistically, there is no emergency. How do you find that it's an emergency? You have to prove it statistically. They've lied from the beginning. The reality to this is COVID-19, according to the CDC, has been nothing more than a list of symptoms. Everybody mentions COVID-19, oh, we got to do this because of COVID-19. COVID-19 is a list of symptoms that cover SARS-CoV-2, which is the actual dangerous virus, and then encompasses four other viruses. So that's five viruses that are existing. The other four are not as dangerous.
Now, and we would remind everybody, look at the hospitalization rates and the deaths.
That's right.
And it's still, by the way, our hospitalization rate is 1.6 per 100,000 right now, which is about 60 people in the entire state of Oregon. This is an emergency. This is what you do. This is how you impose an economic emergency, a climate emergency, a development emergency. You know, emergency, emergency, emergency. Oh, let's fine you if you don't wear your face diaper for, 50, 60 people in the hospital in the entire state of 4.2 million people. So we realize that, in essence, we have treasonous people running the state of Oregon, do we not?
That's where I could go with it very easily, Bill. And the reality is that all of these programs, everything that we have, is basically based upon a lack of citizen involvement. These documents talk about public input. The public input has been falsified through these dispute resolution techniques of a consensus-based process.
And through the gangrene groups that are quite plugged into this system.
Right.
Okay, so let's think about this. Where do we go, from this point? Because I got about a minute left here. I wish I could give you more time right now, but we're going to have to break this down into smaller bite-sized pieces. But
Bill, first I'd like to say that I would rather hear other people that are, more important than this, but this is important. And I will gladly, at any time you have time, we can talk about it. But it's important for the public to hear, the people that are engaged in this. But I spent 2 days at the end of last week, Friday and Saturday, with a friend who lost his home out towards Butte Creek, Butte Falls. And the devastation that I saw along Butte Falls Highway was just, it touched me in a way. I look every day, I read a book.
Yeah, well, the devastation that I saw in Phoenix Talent yesterday, going through a tour of the scar, same thing. It's a gut punch here. And I have absolutely no doubt that if we keep the laws and the policies in place, these areas will not be rebuilt, or they will not be rebuilt in any way that's possibly useful. Am I engaging in a conspiracy theory?
No, you're not. And that's the tragedy to it. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but the reality is, the proof is all around us right now. The proof is all around us. The realities here are inescapable.
Okay, so what part about this is not a gangrene sustainable development population cleansing of Southern Oregon, Mr. X?
Well, it's a forced move to Portland. Where are all of these thousands of people going to live come wintertime, Bill? What's going to happen? This will not be cleaned up by wintertime. I mean, what's going to happen? How is it going to happen? And what happens to our employment base when those people are forced to leave because there's no place to live? This is the reality. We have to figure out a way to make this community strong and figure out how to house people and figure out how to open up things.
I don't think this community can be strong under Senate Bill 100 and sustainable development because it's designed to not be strong that way, using it.
That's exactly right. They're trying to remove the foundation under which we stand as a community, Bill. And I urge people to get educated, read these links, read through them. It's tough. It's a tough read, but look at what it can do to, increase your understanding of how you can comment to this, how we can fight it.
Well, I would recommend, and would you think, and I talked about it this morning, I just said it out there, because I know that a Senator Herman Baird-Shiger or, a Carl Wilson, people like that, Dennis Linthicum, they would be willing to suspend Senate Bill 100 and the entire bureaucracy underneath it. You know that they would be. Senator Golden, Senator Golden and State Representative Pam Marsh, I would have great doubts about it. And frankly, if they're not willing to look at the true needs of Southern Oregonians, then what are they really representing?
Well, that's the whole key. And what they're representing to me is the other side in a war. They've declared war upon us. The pictures in a book from World War II, the aftermath of battles in World War II, our region starts to look like those pictures. To me, that's evidence of a simple truth, that someone has declared war upon us. Why are the needs of the environmental community considered more important than the needs of the entire community? The reality to this is we should have been on a massive program. And I know that these programs move slow, but they move slow because these people sue to stop the progress. And the reality to it is, what's going on? And their ideas are just contradictory to the ability to live a peaceful, reasonable life. And I look at this whole thing, and it has to change. But it can only change if we start taking an affront to their message.
I would also add that you should be with the city councils. You should be with the county commissioners. You should be with your elected representatives at the state. Repeal Senate Bill 100 now, because thousands of people will suffer. And, you know, they always talk about in the liberal world, Mr. X, if it only saves one life. How about thousands of lives? How about thousands of dreams? How about thousands of businesses? How about economic activity? We're going to find out what these people, what do they really believe in? And I'm going to have to cut you loose from this point, and we'll continue this conversation. But I have to tell you, state land use planning, if it continues with absolutely as it has been, as we have grown up with, you can barely build a house right now. How are you going to build thousands? And we'll just leave it at that, Mr. X.
Look at the comments in the past couple of days, Bill. It was, 2 years to get a permit for a development?
Yeah.
This is absurd.
Yeah, it's what John Schleining talked about.
Yeah.
So, Mr. X, we'll have you back. I'm going to share the links. I'm going to have to kind of define them first so people know what they're looking at, because it's a doc dump, okay? I'll get that up on KMED.com.
I'll try to get it up on Mr. X Files as quickly as possible, Bill.
MrXFiles.com. All right. Ed, thanks so much for the call.